Catskill. From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. We have a lot of news to get to, and the news will fall into two broad camps. The first involve some pretty serious local crimes reaching some level of resolution, in one case after many years. Updates on stories that we've been following for a while here on the local edition. And then the other topic we're looking at is development and population shifts in upstate New York. And for all of this, we're going to turn to Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley. Philip, welcome back to the local edition.
Always good to be with you.
So, as I said in the introduction there, we've got, you know, a couple of crime stories to start with, and they're both stories that we've talked about before on this program. And in the case of this first story, the family has been waiting 8 years to find out what happened.
Yeah, that's right. So this is the family of Shanice Harris, a woman who went missing in May of 2017. There was quite a sizable update in that case this week. Federal prosecutors from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York announced yesterday that they had charged 46-year-old man Dwayne Johnson with Harris's murder. And that was in connection with what they described as a long-running drug conspiracy. So Johnson had been in state custody since 2023 after investigators found marijuana and illegal firearms at his Sullivan County home that year. In addition to the murder charge, they also charged him with several drug trafficking crimes, including conspiracy to distribute more than 1,000 kilograms of marijuana and possession of a short-barreled rifle.
This case is one that people have been looking at for a number of reasons, and one of them is because it was so hard for the family to get as much of a response as they felt was warranted when she was missing.
Yeah, that's right. So Harris, the woman who went missing, she went missing from Rock Hill. She was a Black woman, and critics of how the investigation was carried out, basically, and the search for her body said that it highlighted the disparity in attention on missing people of color. And there was a lot of sort of conversation around that during another prominent missing person case, Gabby Petito, a blonde white woman who people might remember from a couple of years ago, and when that was like a huge case that got discussed across all social media and got national media attention as well. I think we also had a little bit of additional news in this story, which was that it was not immediately clear from the statement and from prior reporting whether or not Harris's body had ever been found. One story we saw that was in the Sullivan County Democrat actually reported that investigators searched the area near where her car was found in Monticello, but they did not find her body during multiple searches of that area. But Norm Shannick, who is the Times Union's breaking news reporter in the Hudson Valley, she spoke with Harris's father, who confirmed that, in fact, her body has been found, and shared a little bit of detail. It's not really about the search, but just kind of who Shanice was, a sort of family-oriented person, and that the family is still really grieving the loss.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that stood out too about the article is you know the reaction of the family and the depth of what they've been through. Can you share a little bit more about what the family's saying?
Yeah, so Shanice's father, his name is Thomas Crump. He told us that nobody but families who have missing folks can understand like what they're going through. We have a loss that can never be filled. He said, there are no possible words, not knowing where your child is, not knowing if she is hurt, hungry, safe. that horror is unimaginable. You have to be in it to truly understand it. Now, we don't really have details about when Harris's body was found or really what specifically led police to charging Dwayne Johnson in connection with her murder. We do know that the FBI was seeking information from anybody who might have had dealings with Johnson as far back as like May of 2023. So it sounds like he had been on their radar for a little while, whether or not they were investigating him on these drug charges, and then he ended up, you know, they ended up solving, at least potentially, the question of what happened to Shanice Harris in the course of that investigation. You know, only time will tell. But yeah, certainly, you know, after 8 years, we finally know what happened to her.
And there are still some other questions. Like you said, it's still not even clear about, you know, what about her remains. And that raises questions about for me, about the strength of this case. Of course, you know, they wouldn't be making charges if they didn't feel like they had it. So it will be interesting to see more details on this. Do we have any idea what the time frame will be moving forward? What happens next?
Not totally clear. So he was arraigned in federal court on Wednesday, but the court didn't immediately tell us how he pleaded, and attempts to contact his attorney were unsuccessful. So, you know, I imagine there'll be another 6 weeks, couple months before there's any real developments.
In another case that we've talked about before on air here, somebody was already charged, and the development of the news is now that we do have a guilty plea, and this is in the incident that led to the death of a 2-year-old over at Sleepy Hollow Apartments in Monticello, New York, last summer. What can you tell us about this?
Yeah, this is a story we've done a lot of reporting on over the past year. Antonio Suarez Ware, 2-year-old who died after being left in a hot car on a 90-degree day. The woman who was indicted and charged in that case pleaded guilty and was sentenced a couple of weeks ago now, May 30th, but we just found out about it. She was given 6 months in prison with credit for time served because she's actually been behind bars for about 9 months. And 5 years of probation. And the guilty plea was for criminally negligent homicide. Maria Silva, who wrote this article for us, she talked to the lawyer for this woman who provided some additional details about the events. Basically, what he says happened is that this woman, Sarah Carter, she was coming back home with the child, Antonio Suarez Ware, and another couple of other children, I think including one or two of her own. And she had asked, or her 10-year-old nephew had come out of the apartment complex, and she had asked him to grab Antonio in the back seat. And apparently he basically put him back in the car without her noticing, at least according to the attorney, who says that it was certainly negligent, but he said it was negligent with a sort of, you know, unfortunate outcome, and that she was just a sort of a single mother with juggling too much, and she had gotten unfortunately distracted.
Do you think the sentencing reflects that story being heard by the powers that be?
It's hard to say. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what a typical sentence is for criminally negligent homicide. I'd guess that 6 months with time served is certainly on the lower end.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the story is still kind of playing out.
Philip, I should have asked you this first. Does this story that you're hearing from the lawyer now, you know, as it's laid out in this article, how much of that is new to you with all the reporting that Times Union's done on this? Was some of the story something that you're already aware of, or is this fairly new information?
All of those details about what allegedly happened to cause the 2-year-old to be left behind in the car, all of that was new. So a lot of the reporting we had done had been looking into allegations from a couple of caseworkers and extended family members that Sullivan County Child Protective Services had missed some warning signs that maybe the kids were not in the best care. It's worth reminding listeners that Antonio was in foster care, and Sarah Carter, the woman who has now pleaded guilty to criminally negligent homicide and his death, was the daughter of his foster care mother. So, yeah, we've reported into CPS allegedly missing some warning signs, and we'd also reported that Carter was named in a previous report of alleged child abuse as far back as 2020. But, yeah, these specific sort of details about what happened on the day of his death, that was new to us. But there's still – so Antonio, the two-year-old, he has a brother who is – There's now kind of an ongoing custody battle about who's going to get him, and that involves one of the aunts of the two little boys. And we spoke to her for this article, and she pretty harshly criticized this sentence. She said, "That ain't nothing. It's a slap on the wrist." In response to, you know, the 6 months time served plus probation.
So the family's not happy.
Family's not happy with it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're almost halfway through the local edition. Philip, you don't mind? I'd like to take a break. And this has been the crime half. And then the second half, I think we're going to be talking about, you know, development and population shifts in upstate New York. You good with staying with us?
I'll stay with you.
Okay. Listener, you do the same thing. We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
LA's approach is different than the approach I took as mayor of San Francisco. As governor of California, I have a different approach than the cities, including my old city, San Francisco. I coordinate with ICE as it relates to dangerous criminals.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
Join Radio Catskill as we celebrate the lives and legacies of two musical legends we lost this week, Sly Stone and Brian Wilson. Two prodigies from California who redefined the sound of their times and influenced generations of artists who came later. Hear 2-hour-long specials produced by Paul Engels starting at 7 with Sly and the Family Stone, Taking Us Higher, followed by the epic journey of Brian Wilson at 8. That's all coming up tonight right here on Radio Catskill.
It's the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole, talking with Philip Pantuso, Times Union, Hudson Valley. And Philip, you got some stories about, development in upstate New York and population shifts in upstate New York. Maybe we could start about the story about this, is it a resort, a hotel out in Cairo?
Yes, it's a resort. This is another story we've been covering for a little while. It's sort of very controversial resort, 66,000 square feet. There's a spa, there's cabins. There was at one point a helipad, which I think was struck from one of the amended site plans. But that essentially got the final go-ahead by the Cairo Planning Board this time last week, basically. So last Thursday, the Planning Board approved the final site plan for that project, which is going to be sited on Blackhead Mountain. And that really came against the wishes of a vocal group of citizens there who have mobilized and have been protesting at the planning board meetings. They're calling themselves Friends of Round Top. They argue that the project is too big, would have too many negative impacts on the environment, and would disturb the small-town character of the area. They've begun equating the project to a White Lotus style hotel, referring to the HBO show, saying that it's really only going to attract like the uber wealthy. And they do have one more card to play. So, the step before the planning board approved the final site plan was, when they issued what's called a negative declaration under the State Environmental Quality Review Act, which basically says that they've concluded, based on all the information provided to them, that this would not pose major environmental impacts, which is essentially means they can, you know, do a little bit of a shortcut through what's otherwise a long and usually typically onerous developmental project or process. The opponents group, in conjunction with the environmental nonprofits Sierra Club and Theodore Gordon Fly Fishers, in April, I think it was, filed an Article 78 lawsuit challenging that declaration. So, you know, that lawsuit is just at the beginning. There's no ruling on it yet. If it turns out that, like, actually, you know, a judge or court finds that this project would indeed cause significant environmental impacts, then we're going to go back to an earlier part of this development phase, and maybe the outcome will be different. But as it stands, this controversial project is moving ahead.
All right. Is there any reaction from folks on the ground to the news that it's most likely moving ahead?
The consultants and the developers, they didn't respond to comment. They basically said that, you know, their argument is all in the paper trail that's in the documents they've submitted to the planning board. The opponents group, I thought, took kind of an interesting tack. They, in a statement to us, they said that the decision to approve the final site plan was galling and unsurprising. But they said also that, believe it or not, it's welcome, because it gives us more evidence of the planning board's bad faith, while freeing the attorneys to proceed with the Article 78 lawsuit. So they're essentially saying, bring it on.
Okay, great. And now, staying in a similar ballpark, like you, the Times Union has done a pretty deep dive into looking at population shifts in New York State. And the first thing I think of is how I remember you and I talking a few years ago, coming out of the pandemic, looking at population numbers. And, you know, I was surprised to be hearing that some communities were shrinking, because where we were here, a lot of communities are getting too big. And it looks like that's kind of part of the angle of what you're looking at, is there's like two different things happening at once, depending where you are.
Yeah, it's really hard to sum up this reporting in a pithy soundbite for a radio segment, but I'll do my best here. I really encourage everybody to go look at the full reporting. There's one kind of main story that looks at the top line takeaways, which are essentially, yes, that, you know, since 2022, more than 100,000 people have moved into New York. But of course, the population has declined, declined by about 500,000 or so during the coronavirus pandemic, which, you know, a lot of ink, literal and digital, has been spilled about that, and how that has knock-on effects for cost of living and housing crisis, all this other kind of stuff. So what we did with this story is we looked at census data to look at sort of which communities across upstate New York have gained the most population and lost the most population. And then we kind of zoomed in on a handful of places to try to get a closer look at what's happening on the ground in those places. I mentioned there's kind of one main article that looks at the top line takeaways, and then we have, I think it's 8 separate articles looking at specific communities that have either gained or lost a significant amount of population, essentially the outliers in this data. And yeah, it is really interesting. Like the way that the lead writer on this project phrased it was that there's a sort of virtual Swiss cheese of some municipalities gaining people and others hollowing out. If you look at the map and see where there were gains and where there were losses, it really is pretty scattered. But to your point, like one of the one of the breakout articles we did was looking at villages in the Catskills. And, you know, there's obviously many, but we focused on Franklin and Fleischmann and Hunter. And what's happening in a lot of places in the Catskills was that there was declining population in the previous decade. But then really this decade so far, you're seeing a bounce back, so that most of these places are not back to where they were in, say, 2010, but they're better than where they were in, say, 2019, 2020. And really the main reason for that, at least according to some of the sources we spoke with, was, two things really, more flexibility with work schedules, which means that people who might have simply been weekenders or occasional visitors to the Catskills and the lower Hudson Valley from New York City now relocated up there full time during the pandemic and stayed because they have flexible work schedules. That's a major shift from the last census period, 2010 to 2020. And then the other thing, of course, is just the increasing amount of these two things are interrelated, but the increasing amount of tourism to the Catskills. I think there's been kind of a resurgence in that in recent years after maybe a decade or a couple of decades of decline. And that's putting it on the map for more people as a place to visit. And maybe some of those people who have flexible work schedules end up moving there. But like I said, there's a really a lot to dig into with this project. And there's a lot of sort of separate stories that you can latch onto. We have a lot of maps and sliders and other ways of presenting the data so people can get a snapshot about what's happening, not only in their communities, but really across the state.
Yeah. And I will, again, tell the listener a little bit, like you said, like you should check it out. And one of the reasons is you've got great infographics as well, charts and tables, but also an interactive map. So just as you were talking about Fleischmann's and Hunter and Margaretville and things that are, up there kind of on that 28 corridor, I see that, they're all declining. A lot of the ones that you have in Sullivan County are showing an increase of Village of Liberty, Town of Fallsburg, Village of Bloomingburg, right on the border of Sullivan and Orange counties. But the town of Delaware has shown a 17% loss. And very interesting is looking down in Orange County, one of the biggest increases on the entire map in the state is Curious Joel Village with 117% gain. Right next door to the township of Monroe right there, that's shown 43% loss, and they're right next to each other.
Yeah. So really a big part of what happened there is that in 2017, residents voted to divide the town of Monroe and turn it into the town of Palm Tree. And the town of Palm Tree and the village of Curious Joel are coterminous. And so really what that did is that explains the loss of population from Monroe. And I think that expanded the borders of Curious Joel. Curious Joel, as listeners also know, is almost an exclusively Orthodox community where some of the things that are causing a sort of sagging population in most of the rest of the state, namely declining birth rate and aging population, really the opposite is true in Curious Joel. Curious Joel, I think the median age is 15, and the average family has six people. It's really going, this is also true of some of the other Hasidic enclaves in the lower Hudson Valley, but it's especially true of Curious Joel and the town of Palm Tree because the entire enclave is an Orthodox enclave, or the entire town is an Orthodox enclave. And so its numbers from a sort of census perspective mirror exactly what's happening in that community.
You know, one thing I see, and there's a number of, you know, causes, potential causes here. And you mentioned declining birth rate. And on the other side of that is like aging out of residence. But one thing that I don't see as I search the article is something that you often hear as almost like a kind of political talking point, an old saw that what's driving people away from New York State is the taxes. But I don't see taxes as a factor mentioned here much in this very extensive reporting.
Yeah, that's not something that really came up too much in our reporting. Certainly there were some quality of life things we heard about, especially in some rural areas, lack of accessible and healthcare options being one. But yeah, taxes is not really something that came up.
Before we go, like one of the things that the article mentions too is potential solutions for the shrinking. Is there anything you can give a shorthand of what some of the solutions might be?
Yeah, I mean, solutions is complicated. This is definitely it's sort of the backdrop. This is the backdrop against which Hochul initially pitched her housing compact a couple of years ago. She would say that, you know, building more affordable housing is a solution to at least some of the flight out of the state. And I think there's a lot of people who would agree with her on that. Some of the people we talked to, particularly in small towns and villages that have seen declining population, say that they just need to kind of, you know, in some ways, like essentially just modernize their towns, update infrastructure, particularly places like some of the shrinkage you see is in communities that grew up around state prisons that have now shuttered and, you know, caused a huge economic impact in those communities. We've seen efforts to try to turn those campuses into other types of economic development initiatives, but those take a long time and a lot of state money that, it just takes time for that stuff to play out. And I think any project like this is a bit of a snapshot, right? And I think part of what we're seeing here is we've taken a snapshot after some of these problems have fully reared their heads, but before even the small solutions that have been attempted so far have had much time to take any effect. In 5 years, when we do another project like this, Hopefully the trends are looking a little bit better for the state.
Yeah, maybe by then we'll know what worked, what didn't. Philip, we have just less than a minute here. Can you just tell us real quick what happened up in Howe Caverns?
Yeah, this is a crazy story. So the weekend downpours last week led to the temporary closure of Howe Caverns, Scary County. Really kind of astonishing videos and photos that we have showing torrents of rushing water pouring into the cave system with enough force to rip bricks from the pedestrian walkways. You know, it was kind of a wild scene. As I mentioned, it temporarily closed the caverns, but the staff worked pretty quickly to repair the damage. Some of them apparently even came in on their day off. And by 10 a.m. on Sunday, the caverns were reopened. So if you're planning to go to Howe Caverns for Father's Day, that is once again an option for you. Although I do believe it's supposed to rain again this weekend.
Okay. Well, we'll take your umbrella or perhaps a raft down to the cavern.
Yes.
Philip Bantuzzo, that's who we've been talking to. Times Union, Hudson Valley, all these stories are up now at timesunion.com. Philip, as always, thank you so much for all this news.
You got it. Always good to talk with you.
And that is it for the local edition. Thank you so much for being here with me and with Philip. I'm Jason Dole, and I won't be back here tomorrow, but we'll still have the local edition. Patricio Rubio will be here. And a quick programming note, we're celebrating the lives and mourning the loss of two visionary prodigies, musical legends from California, Sly Stone and Brian Wilson. Sly, originally from Texas, but grew up in California. And, you know, they've done so much for music and everything else. And tonight, Claire is taking a break from Ramble Tamble, and we are bringing you two specials for Sly Stone, Sly and the Family Stone, and